Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. Before we get started, I'd like to ask a favor. If you haven't done so already, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. If you've already done that, thank you. These ratings help the show get discovered so it can reach a wider audience. And while you're there, click the subscribe button so that you get notified of new episodes as soon as they come out. If you don't use Apple Podcasts, you can visit driveonpodcast.com/subscribe to find other ways of subscribing, including our email list. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Today, my guest is Army veteran Annette Wittenberger, who's here to talk about her time overseas. Annette spent 17 years in the Army and now helps fellow veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder as a motivational speaker by reminding them that they're not alone. Annette, welcome to the show, and why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, thank you very much for having me on. So I was raised in California in a small town called Simi Valley. Yes, that's where all the fires were happening a couple weeks ago, unfortunately. And I was raised by my mom. My parents were divorced at 6 years old, so it was my mom and I and my brother. And I lived in California until I was 21, and that's where I decided to go to college in Arizona. And that's when I decided to try out the ROTC program, the Reserve Officer Training Corps, because I wasn't really sure how the military was going to be for me. I was scared to enlist at 17, so I said, let me try it out in college. And I told myself, I'll try it out for a few years and see where it goes. And then I met my husband, and then 17 years later, it's like, what happened? And so I enjoyed it. I ended at 17. I was given the option to retire because I did not, this is always hard for me, but I did not make the promotion list to a lieutenant colonel. And so that really crushed me. And I think that's when everything just started to, all the emotions started to come in. Everything that happened to me started pouring out. And it was just like all of this, the depression hit. It was just really, it was a bad time. So that's when it all started.
So, I mean, 17 years is still a nice long, you know, career in the military. That's nothing to be ashamed about. That's a, you know, definitely hats off to you for that. That is a, definitely an accomplishment. A lot of people, don't make it nearly that long, you know, in the military. It's not an easy life to live, you know, especially with moving back and forth and all these other things that you might, you know, have to experience, you know, through the military with deployments and everything like that. It's definitely not an easy thing. Speaking of deployments, so you deployed to, it was both Iraq and Afghanistan, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. How about, would you be able to tell us a little bit about what you did over there?
Yes. Yeah, so in 2005, 2006, when I deployed to Iraq, I was a company commander for a new unit. And so that was my focus, is making sure that my soldiers were trained, deploy them there, do our mission, and bring them all back. And Afghanistan in 2008-09, I was more in charge of redeployment ops. And so I went there and helped out with the mission and just made sure that everything was good to go for redeploying back. But also, you know, it was a little bit behind the scenes of seeing how our unit functioned, how they conducted their missions. It was really eye-opening for me to be able to see how our soldiers lived. Not all of us get to live in a trailer. Not all of us get to live a roof over our head. Most of them had to, you know, they lived out there in the open, and mm-hmm. had to boil their water and had to have food brought up to them. It was just a completely different way of living that I never experienced. And so it was just like, wow, I need to really stop complaining about being cold. They're on the top. So yeah.
Yeah.
In the perspective.
And what was the unit's mission that you were, so in Iraq you were a company commander, what was the company's you know, job over there?
We were a brigade support battalion, and I was the headquarters company, so we supported them on what they needed.
Okay. Right. So these deployments to Iraq, to Afghanistan, you see the other side of kind of how soldiers how they lived while they're deployed. Like you said, some of them don't have roofs over their heads. They don't have hot meals on a regular basis. They're sleeping out in the open. They have food maybe delivered to them every once in a while, but I got to imagine it's probably largely MREs and yes, things along those lines. Was part of that interaction with those soldiers trying to figure out a way of boosting morale or getting them the supplies that they need, or like what was the part of that type of mission there?
Yeah, so my brigade commander was really big on checking on his soldiers, and I was fortunate enough to go on one of those trips with him. So when we did FOB recons, we made sure we checked on them, boosted mm-hmm. their morale, show them that there's people, us officers in the back, show them that we actually do care what they're doing out there, and making sure that they have what they needed. So it was just those little things, that helps them know that they're actually being thought of and not just out there protecting all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. I know from my own experience, being an infantry soldier, enlisted infantry soldier, we actually had a pretty decent, base in terms of, in Afghanistan, in terms of like the living conditions. We did have a roof over our head, and we did have running water. So like we were not that far off, one of the major bases. It was a kind of more remote location where we were. Supplies still were flown in, on a regular basis, and it wasn't a cushy environment, to say the least. But the roofs that were over our head were plywood huts, basically. They were not much better than that. So but it did help to know, when we did get, people visiting, to kind of see what our conditions were like and what we were going through. On occasion, we'd have some of the higher up officers that would go out on, a mission with us to kind of see what we were up to and what things were going on. It did sort of help knowing that they were there and that they cared enough about what we were doing that, we weren't just wasting our time there either, right. Exactly. So that was a helpful thing, for us. So you talked about, you spent 17 years in the Army, did a couple deployments, and then all of a sudden you were kind of no longer in the Army. Yes. And that obviously affected you, to some extent. What were some of those things that you dealt with, coming out of the Army, with reintegrating back into civilian life, and then, other things, PTSD and other anxiety issues that might have been affecting you at that point? What were some of the things that you did to help yourself reintegrate back and kind of overcome some of those hurdles?
Well, it did take a couple years, because, the Army, they try to do a good job on that 1 week class of teaching you reintegration, resume writing, all that stuff. But it just wasn't, that didn't help me, because I think they forgot about the mental piece. It's not all about, okay, what are you going to do when you get out? Do you have a job? Do you have clothes? Do you have this? Do you have that? It's not all about that. It's about the mental piece. And I think they forgot about that. So for me, after a couple years of being depressed and losing my identity, or I felt like I lost my identity and feeling like a failure because I couldn't finish 20 years, all those things that aren't, I wouldn't say are right, correct, the correct way to feel now. But it was, I learned that it was okay to feel that way. So after I was speaking to some other former soldiers and they told me that they had a hard time, getting out, years before I did, I started to learn that I wasn't alone. And then that's how I started writing about it. For me, I was just journaling or writing on WordPress. It was just for me. And then, I actually liked it, and I decided, you know what, I'm just going to have to put it out there because I can no longer hide it. It was eating me alive, trying to be the strong one all the time, mm-hmm. and then occasionally having these angry outbursts, and I was taking it out on my kids, and I was taking it out on everybody because they didn't understand. So when I launched the website and thought, well, crap, they're going to know now what's going on. And I had more people reading it. And then I started sharing it on more than just Facebook, on Instagram, Twitter. It was all over the place. And I know that some of my friends are really quiet about their life. And I even had a couple, you know, make comments like, why are you sharing all that stuff with you? Are you getting help? Are you getting therapy? So I started to feel like crap, like, well, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't do this. But then I started having strangers message me through Instagram on my website, things that were like, you know, thank you. I look forward to your post. Thank you for being so vulnerable. And I literally cried because I started to realize there were people out there who needed to hear what I had to say, even when I didn't think that I had anything to say. And that's what my mission was just if I could help at least one person by sharing what I went through, then it was, I guess it's all worth it. All the struggles that I went through prepared me for now. Mm-hmm. And so that's what helped me, writing and talking to people. It took me, 19 years to be able to say, I'm a suicide attempt survivor. I did take the pills. I did hide in my room. I yelled at my kids for no reason. I had triggers like crazy. But it's okay now. It is absolutely okay to not be okay. It's okay to feel this way. As long as it takes time. I'm not going to say that it was easy. As long as we can find that person who understands. That's why I think I connect with vets so much. And even military spouses, because they're like, oh my God, I feel like that too. I thought I was mm-hmm. crazy. You're absolutely not crazy.
Right.
This life is hard. Very hard. So.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing that you're talking about in terms of like losing your identity, when coming out of the military, that it's a common thing. And a lot of people feel that, because for the longest time, I'm a soldier, you know, that's who you are. And that's what you do. You go to work on base or, you know, wherever it is. And that's who you are, what you do and everything. And it's all of a sudden gone and you're no longer that person anymore. So then it's like, who are you? And you don't know because you have nothing to kind of just like jump right into. And it's a hard thing to do. But it's actually something I've talked about several times on this podcast with other vets is that, you know, that reintegration, it almost seems like people assume it's just going to be easy to reintegrate back into civilian life because at one point we all were civilians before we joined the military, you know? And so we know what civilian life is like because we lived it. Like for the first, you know, in some people, 17, 18, 20 some odd years of their lives, they were civilians. And then they spend 5, 10, 15, 20 some odd, you know, years not being a civilian. And then all of a sudden they forgot how to go back and be that civilian. Mm-hmm. You know, in the military, everything is planned out for you. Basically, you're told what you need to do, where you need to be, what time you need to be there, what you need to bring, what clothes you need to be wearing. Like everything is planned out for you. The next day after you get out of the military, none of that stuff is there. You have none of that support anymore. None of that structure, I should say. And you now have to figure it out on your own. And figure out what you want to do for a job and what you want to do, with the rest of your life. And for a lot of people, that's just a hard thing to do because they're not really used to that anymore. They've forgotten how to do that. And in some cases, they've just never learned how to do that because, you know, think about it. Like, you know, any of us, you know, you think back to when you're, you know, 17, 18 years old, you didn't really know what you're doing with yourself, you know, like none of us really did. And that's, I think that's common. You didn't really know how to make adult decisions, even though technically you were an adult. And then for the next however long you're in the military, those decisions are basically getting made for you. You know, and to a large extent, not obviously everything, but, and then you're then thrown out into the world and you have to figure these things out on your own. So it's probably a tremendously difficult thing to have to figure out. What were some of the things that you found helpful? You know, obviously, you know, your writing, you know, through your blog, which we'll, you know, link to in the show notes and things like that. But what were some of the things that helped you kind of overcome some of the PTSD and the anxiety stresses that you're having, you know, other than the writing? Or was it the writing and the expressing yourself that was helpful?
That was helpful, but eventually I had to start leaving the house. So I did find a therapist, because you know what, we all need one sometimes. And I got over the fact that I'm not embarrassed anymore. I will tell you, anybody who wants to know, yeah, I talk to somebody weekly and she's awesome. And talking to other people, I started to network with more people. Once I found out that, you know, I like to write, I started to get on other, unfortunately, it's all about Facebook these days. Sometimes you find Facebook pages with groups of people that are like-hearted and like-minded. So I started to connect with them. And that's what helped me, is knowing that I'm going through things, but there's other people that are going through things too. How can I help them? So once I started to decide, okay, you know what, I'm not afraid to say anything anymore, that's when I reached out to people. Hey, you know what, this is what I do. If you ever want to talk, I'm here, because I totally understand. And you don't realize how many people need to hear that, because they'll private message me and say, I just saw your post on Facebook. Oh my gosh, can we talk? So, and it took time. But once you put yourself out there like that, you know, a little bit at a time, you start connecting with other people, and it's like you find your own support system. I have my tribe of friends, military spouses, some soldiers, some vets, but there's also a whole other set too that, you know, they're going through the same thing too. So that's been really helpful for me for the past year and a half, is connecting with people like that who want to help. You know, we all have the same mindset. We all want to help each other out and help more people out because of that stigma. It's so ugly out there, even at the high school age. I have a high school son and a college, my daughter's in college. At those levels, we need to talk about it more. And so it's taken me time to put myself out there, but that's what's helped, because people need to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually recently listening to another podcast that was talking about the mental health kind of landscape, for lack of better words, of younger people. So the middle school to high school kind of age people, maybe 13, the teenage years, basically, which for everyone was an awkward, you know, time, you know, basically, yeah. Like no one had a super smooth time through those teenage years. But nowadays it actually, according to this podcast anyways, it seems like kids are having a lot harder time. You know, the suicide rates are increasing for those age groups, and you know, other, you know, depression and other mental health you know, issues that they might be having are, you know, cropping up during those ages. A lot of it has to do with social media and you know, things along those lines, where they're seeing everybody else's A game and comparing it to their, you know, normal life, and like nobody's social media life is really reflective of their true life, you know, and things like that. So it's, you know, a depressing kind of thing to be comparing to. Couple that with lack of sleep because they're up all night, you know, on Instagram or, you know, whatever, and that's just kind of a recipe for disaster. So you know, so if people are listening to this and they're having issues with younger, teenagers or things like that. Try taking their phones away.
Absolutely. You have to monitor them and put a time limit. And
yeah,
I think I have one of our friends that we've known forever. She takes her son's phone at night and keeps it upstairs with hers. That's why he can't get it.
That's the easiest way to do it. Just take it away.
After 10 o'clock at night, they don't need
right.
it.
Yeah, they should be sleeping at that point. Exactly. So you also, on your blog, you also talked about how you were on Fort Hood or at Fort Hood about 10 years ago now during the shooting that took place there. Yeah. And you actually were somewhat fortunate in that you were not in the area of the shooting, but you were supposed to be. Is that correct?
That is true. I was about to go over there to what they call the SRP site. I was going to get some stuff updated. And at the last minute, one of my friends was like, I need a ride home. My car's in the shop. And I hesitated for a minute. I was like, I really want to get this done. But okay, I'll just do it tomorrow. And so we were leaving out the gate, and there was all this traffic, and I was getting really irritated because I wanted to get off post. And I felt bad because then it started coming down the channels of what had happened, and we were like, oh my God, there was a shooting. Mm-hmm. And it was major, so-and-so. And it was just insane. Everything was on lockdown. We couldn't leave. And of course, I had kids in daycare, and they couldn't leave. And I think my husband was already home. And it was just insane. It was just everything that had happened. And just hearing the aftermath the next day after was just absolutely, it was heartbreaking for everybody. But that could have been me. And I started to just, be thankful that it wasn't. But then again, it was like, well, this is not about me anymore. This is about everybody that we just lost. And it was just absolutely insane. And I sometimes I do block that part out until it's a reminder on Facebook, good old Facebook. And then I'm like, oh my God. And it brings back all the memories back again. And then we just sit and we just say a little prayer for all them. And it's just insane. It's unbelievable still. Yeah.
Yeah, that's certainly a obviously a major incident that took place, obviously affecting many, many lives, not just the people who were injured and killed that day, but the other people who knew some of those people, friends and colleagues and things like that who were affected, and even just being there and being that close to where all that stuff was happening could affect people too. You can certainly go down the path of the what if path. What if I didn't give that friend a ride? Right. What if I decided to go in and into that appointment or whatever? What if I? What if,
Exactly.
I was reading a book recently and they said the what ifs can be very heavy. They can weigh very heavily on you. And it doesn't really do you any good to what if things like that, because it didn't happen. You weren't there. There's nothing different you could have done from your situation. You can what if it all you want, but it's not going to change anything. And so it's really, that's a lesson I think a lot of us need to learn. And partially why I wanted to kind of bring this up is because we all look back on things that we've done. I know I do, or things that had happened, and mm-hmm. play that what if game. Like, what if I had done this? Mm-hmm. Where would I be? Would I have made the wrong decision and ended up getting in trouble or something like that? Or would I have killed somebody that didn't need to be killed because I assumed something that was wrong or whatever? And people, especially going through a traumatic incident like that, tend to play that what if game, and it doesn't help. I've been there quite a bit. with different what if scenarios through many things that kind of took place during my deployment. Mm-hmm. I've sort of realized over the years that I can't keep doing that to myself, although I sometimes still tend to fall back into that.
Yeah.
And I don't really know what the solution is to that, like how to not continue to what if it, but it really is not a helpful thing. I don't know if you have any, thing to add about that or anything that maybe you've gone through to kind of help yourself get over that.
I was in a car accident last year, a really bad one with my daughter. And, a lot of nurses and doctors, they don't know how we survived it. And I went through a lot of what ifs, and like, what if we died? What would have happened? What if I would have brought my dog with me? She could have been killed, all these things. And I have to, my husband had to keep reminding me, but you're here. You're alive, and you need to be grateful. And so I try to do that now when I go into those what if moments and say, you know what, just thank you for letting me be here. Just thank you for giving me a reason or a purpose and put me on a different path. And because there's what if I was still in the Army at that time? I would have probably had to be medically boarded because I couldn't, I'm still in recovery. And it's just all these little things I started thinking about. It's like, okay, stop. It's okay. It was meant. I used to hate this saying, if it was meant to be, or thing, everything happens for a reason, but you know what? It's kind of true. There was a reason for all of this. And so I try to just be thankful. It's hard though, because I think we're always going to have those moments, those what if moments, but as long as we just try to sit back and go, okay, you know what? Let's just be thankful for, whatever. And right. I think that's what's helped me. And,
Yeah, that's the gratitude is certainly something to look forward to and to be able to help you through that. Being thankful that you're obviously still alive and that your daughter is still alive, and that, yes, maybe there were some serious injuries, in an accident like that, but you're here and you're able to continue, you still have, your wits about you. You're still able to, function, maybe it required some recovery time, but you're still here. You're still able to do things. And, the family that knows and loves you still has you here, and that's, I think certainly a thing to be grateful for. And I think all of us, myself included, could probably go back and look at all of these what if moments and find something to be grateful for that came out of it, even though some of it may be completely terrible.
Right.
You could probably follow along a path that you got put onto from whatever that traumatic experience was, and be grateful that you're in a certain position now, or have met a certain person, or have done a certain thing because of that experience.
Right.
And be grateful for that you maybe wouldn't have otherwise had.
Right. And it's hard. It's going to be hard because every situation is different, but yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's true. I can't oversimplify the path that you might be able to take to get to gratitude. But I think, in many cases, you can probably figure out something to be grateful for, even if it's super small, even if it doesn't outweigh whatever the negative was that came from that thing, still finding that small thing to be grateful for helps a little bit. Actually, time kind of flies on when we start talking here, but it looks like we're kind of coming up on time here. But I do have one last question that I like to ask people on this show, and there's no right or wrong way to answer the question. You can answer it with a joke, you can answer it, seriously or whatever, but is there anything that you wish someone would have told you, any kind of advice someone might have given you before you joined the military?
Oh, gosh. That's a hard one because I was stubborn and I did it just because. I think I wish somebody probably would have told me that your life's probably going to change a lot. Mm-hmm. Because I was a very shy person. I was a pain in the ass to my mom, but I I kept quiet and I tried to please everybody. Going through the military, I had to learn to get thick skin, to stand up for myself, and that not everybody is as nice as you are sometimes. You're going to get yelled at. And so, I think somebody should have said your life's about to change. And I would have said, okay, at 21 years old, but it certainly did. And it not at all necessarily bad. I learned a lot. It made me who I am. So.
Yeah. And yeah, that's true. I don't think anybody goes into the military and comes out the same person. It definitely changes you. And like you said, it's not always a bad change. Yeah. There's sometimes good changes that come out of this. There's sometimes, sometimes there are bad changes, between, adjusting to different, things that you're going through or whatever, but, you definitely will change. And I think you have to, before going into the military, you have to be open and receptive to those, potential, changes that you might be going through. Yeah. So great advice. Thank you for sharing that and sharing all of your background and things like that and what you've gone through and kind of how you've overcome some of the hurdles that you've had to go over after getting out of the military. I think that it's definitely going to be helpful for other people who might be going through something similar. So thank you for sharing that. Would you be able to share a few any place that people can find more information about you, your website or, things like that?
Sure. Yes. So on the website, it's awildridecalledlife.com. And same thing for Instagram and Facebook, awildridecalledlife.
Yeah. And so I'll have links to all of those in the show notes and so people can find you there. All right, great. Well, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com, or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.